Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. Finding the right health insurance package is important, but with the wide range of plans available on the Irish market, it can be a daunting task when you don't know where to start. That's why I've teamed up with HCC, supported by Irish Life Health. HCC.ie compares multiple insurers to help you choose a health insurance plan that's right for you and your pocket. They can help you find a plan that delivers all-round mental health support with professionally trained counsellors to listen and give you considered and practical advice. And to get a free health insurance review, simply go to HCC.ie. In December, I travelled to Cork and I spoke to the incredible Desi Fitzgerald.
Don't be afraid of that dark place. A lot of the time we can fear going anywhere near it. Like those feelings of darkness and feeling so low. We can try and go away from it rather than actually going into it, which is a perfectly normal response. Having to go into it can be quite painful. But if you feel low or if you feel down or if you feel like you're in a dark place, actually, allow yourself go in there and kind of speak from there, if you can at all, to somebody in your life and to open it up. Because, as I said a while back, like underneath that darkness, there's a new light waiting to shine through.
Desi is married to Sarah and they have two sons, MJ and Jack, and they live in Charleville in North County Cork. But his world was turned upside down on the 8th of August 2011, and he continued to face unimaginable difficulty over the 14 months that followed. This conversation is a masterclass in vulnerability, acceptance, and in letting go. I was in awe of him, which you'll probably pick up on as you listen, and I have a feeling you're going to be too. I started by asking him about his upbringing.
I'm the eldest of four boys. My lucky mum, she got to live with five men, so she did, but yeah, look, great upbringing by my parents. They were always so kind and caring towards us. And yeah, look, with my three brothers, we've always had a very close relationship as well. I think sport played a major part in our lives, all of us, all the way up along, which was great. We all had similar interests. And so we had plenty of banter at home with one another. And having that sporting passion as well, I think, was it was great. Like, real. And we had so many family events to go to as a result of that. And my mum, while she wasn't into it at the beginning, she got into it fairly
as soon as we started.
She had no choice, pretty much. Yeah.
So did you all play hurling?
We did. All of us played hurling, yeah.
And you performed at a pretty significant level as well.
Started off playing with Charleville at the age of 8, and then was lucky enough to represent Cork all the way up along at underage, and got to play with Cork Intermediates for a couple of years, and won two All-Ireland medals with them, which was
brilliant.
Great, yeah, absolutely brilliant. Absolutely loved it. You know, happy memories for sure.
So back in 2011, life was going along well. You were 28 at this stage of your life, and you were happy in a relationship with Sarah, who's now your wife.
Yeah.
And things were just tipping along nicely.
For sure. Like everything was going according to the plan, really. Myself and Sarah, we met when I was 21. We ended up going travelling to Australia, travelled the world for a year. And we came back. I went back to college when I got back and got a degree in electrical power systems and got a good job afterwards in Cork. Sarah had a good job in the city as well. And yeah, everything was going well. Good social life, enjoying sport, loving the relationship. Great family times. But then everything just took a U-turn. Everything absolutely changed. On the 8th of August 2011, on that day, I remember it so well. I was so excited about going home, seeing my parents and my brothers. They were all off at my first cousin's wedding over in America. I didn't go because I was saving up for my own wedding with Sarah.
So were you engaged at this stage?
We were engaged. Yeah. We were engaged at this stage. And I remember finishing work early, getting back to see them. And I was going home in the car and I, as I said, was excited. But I remember seeing my brother's van parked at the farm entrance in Charleville. And I just thought nothing of it when I saw it because my dad was renting the farm at the time.
So it wasn't unusual?
No, it wasn't. I thought he was doing a job for him there after getting back. And I rang his phone, didn't just have a chat with him, said to tell him I'll see him at home and looking forward to going training with him. And he never answered. And so I rang it again, so he never answered. Then I got back home and my parents weren't there. They were just dropping something off to a friend's house. And so I rang Mike's phone again and no answer. And then I rang my mum and said, is he doing a job up there for dad? And she was like, no. I was like, okay, I'll give a drive up and just check that he's okay. And so I parked the car in a shop. I remember going in the passageway and I was kind of getting this eerie feeling walking in for some reason, and I just started to call out his name and kept calling out his name, and there was no answer when I did. But walked into a farm shed and I just saw my brother had just taken his own life, Mike, and he was Mike was 23. When I saw it initially, I just literally ran out of the shed in disbelief because I suppose I'd never seen him struggling in any way with any mental health issues.
Yeah.
Never spoke about anxiety or anything along those lines. And so when I saw it, I just was in complete disbelief, ran out of the shed and thought to myself, I have to be seeing things. But I ran back in again and looked up and just saw that it was him there. And so it was just mind-boggling, obviously, seeing...
Yeah, what was going through your mind?
I came out, I actually thought I was going to get sick.
Okay.
And then I think it was just in a complete state of shock. I remember just... my heart was pounding, absolutely pounding. And when I saw him, I didn't know if it was his. I kind of blocked out his face when I did see him. But when I ran back in, I just was like, I have to make sure it is him. And in that moment, I was just like, okay, I have to see if he's alive now. And so somehow I managed to get up onto this beam and take him down. And yeah, it was just from that moment, it was just absolute shock. Just the next while, it was just. It was a bit of a blur just going from one thing to the next. I remember ringing my parents first. And then from there, it was just like, it took over. Just the next few days ended up being a funeral. And it was just, we didn't know, any of us didn't know what to do, how to process it. I remember meeting Mam and Dad afterwards and Connor and James in the house. And we just Like, we remember being in the kitchen just hugging one another, all in disbelief with what had happened.
How'd you even find the words to say it to your folks? It's not a natural thing to happen. It's not the way it's meant to be.
I didn't know who to ring.
Yeah.
When I saw him, when I saw him initially, and I was like, what am I going to do? I obviously can't do anything with this on my own.
Yeah.
And so then I just said, look, I have to ring them. They're going to, you know. So I did, and I think I was in such a state of shock when I saw it, and when I rang them, it just came out of my mouth straight away. I was like, Mum and Dad, he's like, you have to come up here. I just said it straight. I was like, Mike is after taking his own life. And so they came up straight away, and they, I can't say what was going on for them, but again, they were just in disbelief, just broke down straight away.
Nightmare.
Absolute nightmare.
Nightmare. So, the days after that, the funeral, they're trying to come to terms with it. I mean, did you come to terms with it? Can you ever?
No, I don't know if... right now, I'm at a place of acceptance with it all. Of course, I wish it didn't happen. But back then, I was fighting with it. I couldn't process it. So I couldn't. I remember afterwards, after the funeral and everything, like, he was well-liked. He had a great group of friends, absolutely amazing group of friends. And I remember after the funeral, we said we would walk into town because I knew all of his friends were going to be over. So I was just going to walk in to say hello to them inside in a bar that they would have always went into. Like, they were all 23 at the time.
Yeah.
I remember walking in the door and seeing them. They were trying to remember him and celebrate his life by having a few drinks and stuff. But I looked around and I just had to get out of there straight away. I was like, I am in no fit state to be around anybody, to process what had just happened. So I just went straight home and pretty much stayed at home. But I remember being with Connor and James and Mum and Dad, and we pretty much stuck to ourselves. You know, there was people calling all the time, but just stuck to ourselves, tried to process it, but couldn't. Not in that short, such a short space of time, in a way, for sure.
No. And it's just the shock of it and the fact that there were no signs. Did you ever get any answers, as to why?
Absolutely none. That's something that we're never going to find out. We're going to bring with us until we pass on ourselves. No, never any answers. Asked all of his friends, was he struggling in any way with anything or anyone, or did he have any financial troubles? And there was nothing, like, absolutely nothing. I don't know if it makes it any easier or harder. I don't know. Like, if there was answers, would it be any easier?
Okay.
You know, I doubt it. Like, regardless,
because he's gone. He's
not here with us anymore.
You're trying to live. You're trying to carry on with your life. But normal is not normal anymore. Life's changed forever. And only 2 months after that, you're back on the pitch and you're playing a game of hurling.
Yeah.
And an important game at that. So what was this one?
This was a county semi-final.
Yeah.
With Charleville. And yeah, it was a big one. I suppose sport has always played such a major part in my life, and Mike's as well, and Connor and James too. I remember on the lead up to the game, like, really wanting to win this one for him. He just passed. And I remember looking into the graveyard on the way to the game, just like saying, we're going to do this one for you. And the game started like any other normal game, and it was going well for us. But about 25 minutes into the game, I saw one of the opposing players. He was just going to strike for goal, and so I sprinted back as quickly as I could to flick the ball away from him, and I dived in for a tackle. I went behind him, but there was another player coming out towards me as well, and I ended up getting sandwiched between the two players, and I got knees into the chest, and my head just sprung back and forth, and I fell to the floor, and I was in a daze for a couple of seconds. But after a minute or so, I realised that I couldn't feel or move anything from below my shoulders down. I was trying to get up, and I was like, what is going on here? I can't move. And so, obviously, again, I remember facing sideways, and I was just in disbelief. I was thinking to myself, there's no way, it's like, I cannot be paralysed here. And after a minute or so, I was surrounded by people, and luckily for me, there was two nurses there on the sideline, and they ran over and just pushed everyone away, because I think they saw pretty quickly that
it was serious.
Yeah.
So they said not to move you.
Yeah, they just said stay away. And I remember them carrying out various tests on my feet. It was Denise and Beatrice. Never so grateful to them. But they were just carrying out various tests, and I could kind of see a little bit of worry in their face. And so, yeah, they pushed everyone away, and an ambulance was called straight away.
Because had they not been there, more than likely, you know, your instinct is to move someone and try and help them.
And I wanted for people to, I was like, you know, oh, just get me over to the sidelines or I can recover. I didn't.
But that would have obviously been the wrong thing to do.
Oh, totally.
But had you been moved?
Oh, it would have been a different story completely. Yeah. I would be paralysed from the shoulders down, most likely, for the rest of my days. Yeah.
Wow, Desi. Right, so the ambulance arrives. And you're brought to the hospital.
Yeah. They were brought to the hospital, CUH first in Cork, then transferred straight from there to the Mater Hospital in Dublin. And after a while being there, I was told that I had fractured C4, which is a bone in my neck, and that it also damaged my spinal cord.
Okay.
For me, my only saving grace was that my injury was an incomplete injury, which meant that there was a chance, like my spinal cord hadn't completely severed. There was a gap at either side of mine, so there was a bleed right in the centre, but there was a gap at either side, and so there was some hope that some signals might make their way around to bleed and through that gap, and I may make some sort of recovery. They didn't know what, if I'd walk again or not, but they said at least there was a glimmer of hope for me.
And what was going through your own mind at the time?
At that time, I grasped on to that glimmer of hope, because when I was lying there waiting for the result, I was thinking to myself, what if he says that is it for me now? Like, what if they come in and tell me I'll never move again? Like, I was just playing through my life and what it would look like on the bed like that. It was extremely hard to process. So when he gave me any glimmer of hope, he said those words, I latched onto it straight away.
And is that a sign of the type of person you are? Like, are you a glass half full? Are you naturally more inclined to be optimistic when it comes to challenge?
Yeah, I am. I think it's fair to say that I would be, for sure. Yeah. I think I would have always had that mindset, and I think sport would have helped me out in that regard as well.
Okay.
I think having that mentality, it certainly helped me in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was hope. But you're still coming to terms, emotionally coming to terms with the loss of your brother in such a short time. And now you have this, you know, a dramatic physical injury that you don't know what the future holds. At this point, while there is hope, you just don't know what the road is going to be like ahead.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
How long were you in hospital at that stage?
I spent 5 weeks in the Mater, and then I was transferred over to the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary, and spent the bones of about 9-10 months inside there.
Okay.
And so it was. It was so, like, strange to begin with, trying to get in my head around what had just happened. So again, for the first 2 weeks, I was probably lying in that bed in a state of shock. I was just strapped to the bed. Looking up at this fluorescent light, and I remember counting the bubbles on it so often just to pass away the time. But again, just like finding it extremely hard to process and to come to terms also with, like, everyone doing everything for me, like being lifted out of the bed, being washed, being brought to the bathroom, people having to brush my teeth. I remember, I'll never forget, an earphone coming out of my ear, and the most natural response to that is to go and pick it up and put it back in your ear, right? But I remember having to ask Sarah or one of my family or a nurse to come over and put that earphone back in, and it would fall out again after a few minutes, and the same thing. Like, it was just things I'd taken for granted every day. Yeah. Like, just complete another life change, going from being independent to depending on everybody else around me. And that continued on for, you know, for the bones of a year whilst I was in hospital, for sure.
And for anyone listening who, you know, it's very hard to imagine unless you've been in your situation, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can relate to it unless they themselves have lived through that, to know what that's like. Because as you said, I think we do take simple things for granted,
yeah,
that we can do. We don't think about it.
We don't think about it. And neither had I before all of this had happened. We don't think about it because we don't need to think about it. And so, but yeah, when it's right in front of you, I mean, it's just a complete change. And obviously you have to think about it and you have to do your level best to get on with it. But
that would test the most patient of people.
Yeah.
Anyone who is naturally quite laid back and kind of go with the flow about things would find that really, really tough.
Yeah.
But then coupled with the fact that emotionally you were still coming to terms with the loss of your brother.
Yeah.
Had you had any counselling around that time, any help?
No. It was so quick. It was 2 months after it.
So quick.
That even then I wasn't processing what had happened to Mike, because after Mike passed, I immersed myself in busyness afterwards. Like, when he passed, I remember I went back to work 2 weeks after he passed, and I was working long hours there. Then I'd finish work, I'd go hurling training. Then if I didn't go hurling training, I went to the gym. If I didn't go to the gym, I would organise to meet somebody. And so by the end of the day, I would be so exhausted, I'd fall asleep, and I'd get back up and do the same thing the following day. And that was how I led into that game for the 2 months beforehand. And so I was trying not to process what had happened to Mike.
Were you deliberately distracting yourself, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Wasn't used to feeling feelings at that point in my life. And in hospital, I mean, the same. Like, it was extremely busy when we were inside there. Like, in the National Rehabilitation Hospital, it was a case of you're woken at 6 in the morning, you're constantly going until 6 o'clock that evening with all sorts of various therapies. And so I was exhausted. I was getting glimmers, you know, short moments of thinking about Mike and having to process him. But even then, I was blocking it out because I couldn't even deal with what was happening to me right now. And I certainly couldn't start thinking about Mike and start dealing with the loss of him in my life. It would have been way too much for me to be able to, for my mind to be able to handle at that time.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Sarah was by your side through this. And obviously, you're still engaged. You have a wedding that you're planning for, but she's taking over the reins there. You're not halting the wedding. You're not delaying it. You're not stopping it. You're still going ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how, but
it's great.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, that woman, she's just amazing. Like, the fact she stuck with me, like, not once did she, you know, think of, well, I don't know if she thought about it, she said she didn't, and I truly believe her because of the type of person she is, but she stuck by my side the whole way along. And this, like, we didn't know how this was going to play out for me, and like, her life could have been impacted very much so. Like, if I was in a wheelchair, if I was going to be relying on her to do things for me in terms of us having kids, anything along those lines, like, that was all up in the air for us. And so, to me, I was thinking to myself, you shouldn't stay with me. Like,
did that go through your mind?
Yeah. Oh, it did. That went through my mind a whole lot.
Okay.
So I did, like, don't stay with me. Like, I'm going to bring you down if you do stay with me. Like, there's going to be too much, too many obstacles and too many challenges in, firstly, my life. But this has happened to me. I have no choice but to get on with this. But for you, you have a choice. I mean, you can leave. You can move on. You don't have to have this hindrance, which I was considering myself. Like, I genuinely consider myself as a hindrance to me and to being out there in the world, and to Sarah certainly as well. But she
loves you and loved you very much, so she wasn't going to go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I suppose, isn't that what it's meant to be about? Like, you know, in sickness and in health.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were certainly living up to what a wedding and marriage is meant to be, which is that she wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
So how long away was the wedding at this point from that day on the pitch? When was your wedding?
So that was, I had the accident in October and the wedding was the following March.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was close.
It was close. Extremely close.
Yeah. So there wasn't any sense of let's ring the venue and delay the date just a bit?
We spoke about it so much and we spoke to doctors in the National Rehabilitation Hospital, my physiotherapist, occupational therapist, and they were like, go ahead with it if you feel up to it. I mean, they gave me the green light. And I mean, at the time, I think it was a focus for us. Again, it was some sort of a distraction
goal.
Away from... Yeah, it was a goal, for sure. And also a distraction away from what was happening for us. And like for me in rehab, a huge part of it was me. It was like, okay, if the wedding is going ahead in this day, what if I could push myself enough to be able to maybe even stand up, get out of the wheelchair for a short period. And so for me, it was a goal. And this sporting background I had, it was like, okay, this is great. It's like something...
Yeah.
To
work towards.
Something to work towards and go for.
And at that point, was that a realistic, you know, wish, desire to have, to be able to stand on your wedding day? What were you being told in the hospital?
I mean, they were never going to say whether I was going to or not. They couldn't. I mean,
sure.
A spinal cord injury is different for everyone, especially some with an incomplete injury. You've no idea way it's going to play itself out.
But what kind of movement did you have in the beginning?
At the beginning, I remember after a couple of weeks, my big toe wiggled on my left foot. Oh, straight away, I was like, tears just started to come down my face when that happened. And then from there, it like so slowly travelled up my left leg. So I was wiggling my left leg and it travelled over to my right. And it slowly started travelling upwards from there. And so when I got to Dunleary, I was still being lifted everywhere, pushing the wheelchair everywhere. But after a couple of months being inside there, I managed to stand up. Like, I was being helped, but I managed to stand up and hold on to these barriers. And it just started from there. And the lead up to the wedding, I mean, just before the wedding, I was just standing. So I was...
Wow.
And
that was massive.
It was huge.
From where you came from.
Absolutely.
Huge.
Like amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Oh.
Yeah, and couldn't believe it. And it went on from there. And so that was huge for me, the wedding day, because I went in the wheelchair.
Okay.
And I came down, like I walked down the aisle with Sarah.
Oh, wow.
There was about, Sarah was holding me up by the crutch and the other hand, my two brothers, Connor and James, were behind me, ready to catch me if I fell. And it took us about an hour to get down the aisle, but we managed to come
Doesn't
down.
Matter.
Like regardless, it was powerful.
Wow, I bet the atmosphere in the church was something else. What was, I suppose, the sense of pride and joy that I would imagine everybody felt for you?
Yeah,
You could see it, feel it.
You could see it, feel it.
So James and Connor, with your folks, were there with you, as were Sarah's family and your friends, and it was a good day.
It was a good day.
It was
I'm going to say, the best day since everything that had happened, in a way, for sure.
Sure.
So it was a good day, being surrounded by family, friends, and great day.
And you even went on a honeymoon.
We did. We said we would do our best to leave Ireland, and so we went over to England. Sarah was driving a 99 Toyota Yaris at the time, and we packed it up with the amount of medical gear we had to put into it. It was absolutely insane. We packed it up and off we went to the Cotswolds for 10 days, two weeks.
Oh, gorgeous. It is a beautiful part of England.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would what were your doctors telling you at this point?
They were saying to be very careful and mind myself. Like,
but they were okay with you going?
Oh, they gave me They gave me the green light.
Okay, good.
Sarah, she ended up having to give me injections in the morning, and she pretty much had to be my wife and carer for that trip. But we said it would be a memory that we would have forevermore. And so we went for it. Got on the ferry.
Good on you.
And we had a good. It was different. We were trying to adjust to it. Obviously, it was my, like, I just left hospital just beforehand, and so this is pretty much our first time being around one another out in public in society, like, and it's different in every regard. But we managed it. We got on with it, and we had good times for sure.
Yeah. So I suppose despite the obvious challenges of it, it must have been empowering for both of you as well, yeah, to be away and be able to do it yourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so after the wedding, though, I suppose between the accident and having the wedding date and not changing it and having that goal, there can be, even regardless of accidents, there can be an anticlimax after big events.
Mm.
And a come down.
Yeah.
And I think that happened to you as well.
It did, for sure. When we got back from the honeymoon, I had to go back to hospital again. And so I was in Dún Laoghaire again for a few months. And there was a come down after the wedding, for sure. And I remember being in hospital and getting kidney infections a lot because of, you know, with a spinal cord injury, literally everything, your whole body pretty much shuts down. And so everything gets affected. And so I was on a lot of medication and stuff as well, because of what was going on, because of the injury. And come down, go back into the hospital a second time. And then I left hospital after a few months to go home. And I really struggled when I got back from hospital, because I was getting back into the world again, in my view, as a completely different person. Like, I was Desi Fitzgerald before, the man who used to play hurling, the man who could go out and socialise, the man who could do pretty much whatever I wanted in life. Now I was getting out of hospital and I was completely different. Like, I was still relying on people to do a lot of things for me. I was still in the wheelchair the most of the time at that period. And so adjusting to life with a spinal cord injury, like with a disability, I found extremely, extremely challenging. And I did. I became quite depressed after coming home from hospital. So I did. I never admitted that, but I was, and everyone around me could see it in me. And I think it's a natural response,
yeah,
to, you know, your life changing so much. But I was in.
And you were deep in grief still.
Deep in grief. Like, Mike started to, you know, come into my mind a lot when I had time on my hands, when I wasn't so busy with physiotherapy, etc. And so, trying to process what had happened to him, like, everything started to sink in. So it did, which life became very, very struggling and hard for me during that time. And I remember myself and Sarah, we rented an apartment when I left hospital, and Sarah organised a surprise 30th birthday party for me. And she did it just to try and, you know, lift my spirits and get me out there with my friends again, because I wanted to distance myself from my friends and everyone, because, you know, I suppose I disliked myself as a human being during that time. I didn't feel like I was enough as a human being. And so that's the place that I was in, and she was trying to support me and get me out mingling with friends. And so we did. She had a surprise party. I got an all-merciful shock going in the door. And so, look, we had a good night, and we left and went home. And my brother James, he came back and he stayed with us in the apartment. And I remember waking up the next morning, and we had breakfast with one another. He ran uptown to get us all breakfast and came back, and we were having a good laugh with one another. And he walked out of the apartment, and I remember him saying goodbye. And I said goodbye, James. And I said, I'll see you soon. And next thing, he came back in the door again. And he said, no, Des, I will see you soon. And I remember thinking to myself, my God. I said, oh, yeah, of course, James. I said, I'll see you soon. And it was later on that day. And as I said, no, I was at a low point in my life at this time. Later on that day, I got a phone call from one of my friends. And Ben, and he just said, look, James, he was working out. He was at a gym, and he just said, James is after passing out. And I was like, what? I said, no way. And I said, no, he's just after passing out. And again, they said they're after calling an ambulance. And I was like, oh my God. And so I was with Sarah at the time, and we got into the car. And just as we got into the car, I saw this ambulance rushing through town, and I was like, oh my God, James is probably inside in that right now. And so met my parents and my brother Connor and with Sarah, and went to the hospital after it was that James was in that ambulance, and we went up to the hospital, and after a while being up there, like, they were, doctors were trying to bring him around, but after a while they came out and just said that he had died as well of sudden adult death syndrome. And so I don't know, like, even now, like, I can remember that again so clearly, like, being there, like, just in disbelief, didn't know what I wanted to do, wanted to cry, was so angry, so frustrated, in disbelief, like, within 14 months, like, having two of my brothers having passed, and me, I was properly physically disabled at the time, like, said to Sarah, that's pretty much it, now I'm done, I was like, I can't do this anymore, saw myself as, I didn't know what was going to happen from there, didn't want to be here, if I'm honest.
Again, no warning, again, no signs.
No.
James was 16?
16, yeah. Like, big into sport again.
Healthy young
guy. Big into hurling, really healthy young guy.
Yeah.
And so no signs, just, yeah. Another, like, within a split second, just life change again.
What was going on for your other family members, for your parents and for your brother Connor?
Probably similar to what was going on for myself, like, just in an absolute state of shock. Like, how, like, as I often think of my mum and dad, like, I think it's one thing to, you know, lose your brother or, you know, or sister, you know, it's one thing to lose a sibling. I think for parents, like, it's another layer for parents. But I don't know how, but they just stayed so strong. You know, you often hear sometimes of, you know, couples kind of finding it very hard when they lose, you know, a son or daughter, understandably so. And, you know, you kind of hear of people distancing from one another. Mm-hmm. With my parents, like, they were close before, but this brought them even closer. So it did. So they stayed so strong with one another. So they did. I mean, I suppose I didn't see what was happening for them, like, behind the scene when they closed the bedroom door at night. You know, I'm sure there was many tears, you know, a lot of heartbreak. But when they were around me, they tried to stay upbeat. I suppose they saw how much I was struggling at the time, and they were trying to do their level best to support me. And so.
And as a family, you were always so close.
Yeah, it's the thing. Yeah,
you weren't brothers that, you know, went your separate ways at a certain age. You were still very tight.
Hugely so. Like, myself and, like, Connor's still alive. We were always extremely close. Like, Connor's the next
in age
to me. Yeah. And then Mike and James, all of us. Like, we would definitely be on the phone to one another four times a week without a shadow of a doubt. And then we'd meet one another training, etc. And James was, there was a 14 year age gap between myself and James, but.
Yeah,
we were together all the time, so we were. So yeah, look.
And you must have been quite protective of him as well,
yeah,
with that age gap.
Being the oldest, like, as well, like, that really hit me as well. Like, yeah, with both Mike and with James, like, yeah.
How do you begin to make sense of it, or can you ever make sense of it?
Don't know if I'll ever make sense of it, but in terms of coming to terms with it, or getting to a place of acceptance with it, because I can't change it.
Mm.
Like, and if I struggle with accepting it, which I did do for a long period, I mean, I was angry, like, so frustrated, like, sad, felt guilty that I was here and that they weren't. I went through all those range of emotions, like, and was, you know, didn't want to get out of bed for months after all of it had happened. But I remember being with Connor afterwards. Connor brought me to just to our local GP, Dr. Surgery in Charleville. Mm. I remember sitting in the waiting room with him and just had one of those, like, pretty strong light bulb moments whereby I thought to myself, I still have a decision here. Like, I can watch.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
Hello, and feel sorry for myself and be angry and bitter about everything that has happened, and I knew if I continued on down that route, I'll struggle for the rest of my life if I stay doing that. Or I can decide to do everything in my power to turn my life around. Even though I'm in a dark hole, I'm in a mess now, I can still do something to turn this around. Like, I remember so many people have done it. That came into my head, you know. So many people have turned their lives around, their lives around for the better. They can do it, why can't I? And I'm being with Connor in that day, inside the surgery, I was like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to turn my life around here. I remember even saying it to the GP, Tom Malloy, at the time, said the exact same thing to him. I was like, Tom, I'm going to do this. I'm going to turning my life around. Because I think even he was worried for me at the time, about, you know, what was going to happen to me. And
there'll be people listening that will resonate with that, because not everybody has had the type of challenges that you've had to contend with, but most people have had some form of challenge, be it through illness or loss. And when you speak about kind of that place of being at that crossroads where, you know, you were in a dark place, but you knew it was almost like choosing between roads, something has to give.
Yeah.
Because you can walk down either road, but one is going to perhaps bring you into a deeper, darker mood, and we don't even want to think where that road ends up. Whereas the other one, as tough as it is, it might lead to something better.
Yeah.
So you bit the bullet and you made a decision to try and help how you were feeling. What did you do?
I contacted a guy, Cork, in Cork, Tom Carey was his name. I'm sure he's not going to mind me mentioning him, but he, brilliant guy. And I went to him and spoke about everything that had happened, and just to try and get things off my chest. Like, I was way down with so many emotions, and my thinking mind was just like constantly rushing with thoughts. Why me? Why me? What if? What if this didn't happen? What if? And so I was just like overwhelmed with all the thinking and feeling. And so I went to Tom and spoke to him, and he was brilliant. Like, I just slowly began to get things off my chest, began to process what had happened to Mike to begin with, you know, James, and with living my life with a disability, like, and the challenges that come along with that. And so you know, I felt a huge benefit in that. I felt it was great. And he mentioned this workshop to me then. It was a Clear Mind workshop being ran by a Canadian couple. It was a 3-day workshop. And he said, you know, you should give this a go, and went to it. And it was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. I went in the door, looked around. I think it was 15 of us participants, and there was 2 people running it. When I sat down initially, I thought to myself, my God, there's no way I'm going to speak up and be vulnerable here in front of these strangers. But then I saw 2 people speaking before me, and I could see the shift in them, see the change in their eyes and their face after they allowed themselves to be vulnerable in front of us. None of us were judging them. None, all of us were just feeling nothing but compassion for them. Mm. And so I spoke next, and again, I had the same experience. I just felt like a weight had lifted off me, and it's been 3 days in our workshop, literally crying, talking, screaming. They had all sorts of different exercises that we engaged in just to keep on getting down there at an emotional level and speak from that pain. Not speak about the pain, but speak from the pain to actually get it out there in the open. And that was the turning point in my life. That was the start of a big shift in things for me. Like, I left after that weekend feeling very different than when I went in.
That's very powerful, isn't it? Speaking from the pain.
Yeah. Not about it, but from
it. Yeah. Because when you're in that state, and you were in a state of extreme pain.
Yeah.
Extreme.
Yeah.
And you feel, as you said, you were felt lighter, you were feeling this release. Was it like every time you spoke or you cried or you screamed or whatever it was, that you were letting some of that go?
Yeah.
Right. Brilliant.
I was just letting it go. And every time that I did it and truly went for it.
Yeah.
Whilst the feeling may have been sadness or anger or whatever it may have been, always underneath it, like, there was always peace underneath it. Mm. Like, when I spoke from that place of pain, underneath it, it was like, oh, it's like this sense of, what if I end, there's a bit of light under there. There's actually peace under there, under all of those emotions. And when you get a glimmer of that, when I got a glimmer of that, I kept on wanting to go back there. Like, okay, there's something different in there. I don't have to be overwhelmed. I don't have to be guilty. I don't have to be riddled with sadness for the rest of my days. I can know that there's always something underneath it, which is light. Peace. That was my experience of it anyway.
Well, what strikes me about you is how courageous you are, because even just stepping through those doors takes a lot of guts, because you were going to be in a room with people you didn't know, meeting 2 people running the course that you didn't know. And I suppose you had to make a decision. Am I going to allow myself to really go for it or not? And I would imagine, before you started to speak that first time, that was scary.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've heard that motto in sport, like, but leave your feelings outside the dressing room door.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I had that motto in sport, which possibly was okay, but I had it in life too before that. Like, I never allowed myself to be vulnerable in life.
Did you not?
I thought it was a sign of weakness. But quickly became aware after everything that happened, vulnerability isn't a sign of weakness. My God, it's a sign of pure strength. And it's ended up changing my life without a shadow of a doubt. And so I'm very grateful I went for it when I went into that workshop on that weekend, for sure.
I think for people listening, for men who struggle, and it's a stereotype, but unfortunately it can be true in a lot of cases, that a lot of men struggle with that, because from an early age, you're told, boys don't cry. Yeah. And you're told to be strong and be brave. And it's almost like permission isn't given to boys to express their emotions. And that they're, you know, be strong, carry on, keep going, keep trucking. And while there's a time and a place for that, it can cause damage, because when you get to a certain point in life and then you really struggle when you hit a really, you know, a challenge in your life, if you struggle to process that emotion, that is unhelpful. It's really unhelpful, isn't it?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And that's part of the majority of the reason as to why I, you know, that I do share my story now every so often, that like something good can come of it in that regard. Like if only one person hears this and ends up actually speaking about what's going on for them, like it's definitely worth it. And you're right, like men in particular, I think women are much better at being vulnerable, like at speaking about what's going on for them at a feeling level. But us men, we can really struggle with it. And yeah, it's something that we've learned along the way, and then we struggle with unlearning it.
Yeah.
And so then to actually go there and be vulnerable with somebody else, like when it has to happen, like my God, it is challenging.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. But it's for all of us. I mean, we all struggle. It doesn't. Like, I wish I was vulnerable way back when. I've struggled as well, but they've been small things. But those small things, they can be just as impactful as the big things.
Mm.
Doesn't take for having to lose a loved one or have to be, you know, have to live your life with a disability to actually struggle. We'll struggle in school. We'll struggle at home sometimes. We'll struggle in life, in work, in college, wherever we go. And to those feelings that do start building up when we do struggle, they need to be expressed. They don't need to be buried. They need to be expressed as we go along. And so,
yeah,
for all of us, men and women, I think we all need to go there, all need to have someone in our life that we can go to with those feelings, with those thoughts that are going through our head, and speak about them. Because when we speak to them, we become aware of, well, hang on a second, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my feeling. That'll come, that'll go, it'll move to another one. But to bury it, it doesn't fully go then. It stays there to be triggered for some other time down the route. And
yeah. So those 3 days were a breakthrough for you.
Yeah.
But you knew that it doesn't end here. This is the beginning of processing and working through all the emotions, and not just the emotions, mentally, physically and emotionally, what was going on for you.
Mm. Yeah.
So what happened after that course?
When I saw the impact it had on me, firstly mentally and emotionally after leaving it, it's crazy. It just goes to show the link between the body and mind. But my physical body followed suit with that healing that had just happened. Like, I felt so energetic afterwards, ended up engaging in more rehabilitation, and my physical body just started to come to life once again. And so I started to heal in that way, and like it was so powerful. So
can I ask you a bit more so about the course itself? Like, what were the therapies that were implemented over those few days?
It was, to begin with, it was like sitting around in a group setting. It was talking to me before, it was like something I'd see in an American TV show.
But
So group talk, and then there was exercises, which I'm not even going to explain to you now, because I'm going to explain it to you and you're going to be like, oh my God, that doesn't make any sense. But when you're in the middle of them, they're extremely, extremely powerful. So there was talking for the first day, then the two people running it, they spoke about themselves to let us into their life so that we felt comfortable in being vulnerable with them.
Yeah.
And then
By the way, just before you say that, just to put you at ease, I have done lots of different types of workshops and courses down through the years. Yeah. That some people I speak to would think, that sounds nuts. So nothing is crazy to me. I think it's fascinating. When you try different therapies, what can click and what can work? And sometimes we can be sceptical about them, or sometimes we might think, ooh, I don't know about that, that sounds a bit mad. But when you let yourself go and try something, you know, you can feel the positive effects of things.
Without a doubt. And there's always learning from trying something. I knew I wasn't going to, you know, go backwards by giving it a go. But yeah, a lot of it was talk therapy. There was conscious connected breathing. There was part of it. And so we used to do that for quite a while. It was an hour long each time. Real sense of release in relation to that. And you come up and afterwards, you'd feel this weight having lifted without having said anything, but just breathing your way through whatever emotions were in there. And that was powerful. And then you come back out of that, and it is so well designed, they knew well people are going to be open at that point. Like, people just went for it then completely when we were in a group with one another. And you could, again, when you're in a group setting like that and you see everyone is sharing what's going on for them, like within after a day, there's a bonding there that's like something unbelievable. Like people were sharing things inside there that they'd never shared with anybody in their entire lives. Within strangers after one day, like that's pretty powerful. And so to have that sense of connection with those people within their inn, like that's a big shift. So it is, but that is powerful and that is healing in so many ways. In doing that, if you can do that with a stranger, imagine what you can do with a loved one.
Yes,
to engage in that setting.
Yes. Isn't it fascinating that you can meet somebody for a very short time in terms of what time is, and it can be so profound.
Yeah.
And yet you can know someone, you know, your entire life and not have that type of connection.
Yeah.
And as you said, if you could apply that to the relationships that you have and the closeness that you have, you know, how much better our lives can be. But I would imagine then you did bring it to your own life and your relationships and into your marriage. Did Sarah notice a big difference after those few days?
Oh, she did. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, she knew that I'd let go of a lot of what I was holding on to. And I felt capable then to actually open up to her as well, because I wasn't, you know, I was even afraid to speak to her about it. She wanted me to. I was afraid to go there myself. And I was afraid to actually, I think initially I was actually afraid, my God, if she sees this in me, what would she think of me? Because again, would have seen myself as being this strong man that wasn't vulnerable before.
Yeah, yeah.
To now letting, you know, people in, letting Sarah in, I was like, oh. it was a challenge at the beginning. But after that weekend, I knew, like, this is the right thing to do. Why not go there? And so, yeah, just totally, completely let her in. And so once again, when I did, she was crying out for it. Like, she just met me with nothing but compassion once again.
And you've probably connected on a far deeper level as a result.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely, totally.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because when somebody makes themselves vulnerable in front of you, I mean, it's brilliant. It's very powerful. Yeah. And I think it just deepens everything. It deepens everything. So I think anyone listening, if you're struggling with vulnerability, you know, just listening to Desi talk, like, and listening to anyone speak about vulnerability, it's that first step into it, I think. Can sometimes be the most terrifying.
Yeah.
But once you do, and it becomes a muscle, then you exercise. And then before you know it, it's your comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's my comfort zone now.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to leave being vulnerable because I know how good it feels, you know.
Yeah.
But the grief was still there. It wasn't that after 3 days, you know, tick that box. But at least it was a start. There were obvious physical, mental and emotional benefits to doing the type of work that you were doing. How quickly did you have your first boy then after that?
That was in 2015. We had MJ.
Yeah.
So that was 4 years after the accident.
Okay.
I firstly didn't know if I was going to be able to have kids after having the accident.
Was that a concern? Was?
Well, I remember being in the bed, and it just kept coming over my mind because I always loved kids. I always wanted to have kids.
Yeah.
And that thinking was going on in my mind. But doctors there in the rehab hospital, they told me no, I should be okay in that regard. Which again, I was very grateful for.
Great.
But then, you know, questioning what kind of a dad am I going to be. If I am a dad having a disability, like I doubted myself in that regard, then like, will it be too much for me? Will it be too much for Sarah? You know, what about a kid? I suppose I recovered a lot within that space of since 2011 to 2015, physically and mentally and emotionally in every way. And so, yeah, Sarah and I decided to start a family, and it was, obviously. Like amazing, after so much hardship and loss, like we had managed to turn our lives around as a couple. Still grieving all the time. I'm still grieving to this day for all the loss, of course. But like, what a positive thing bringing another human being into this world and being a dad. Like I felt so proud when I saw him. Oh my God,
Holding him for the first time, what was that like?
What was it like? I think I was just so happy, couldn't believe that he was here. Just a whole range of emotions, but like such positive ones. Felt so blessed. That's exactly how I felt. Just absolutely blessed in that moment when he arrived.
Had you named him before he was born? Did you know you were having a boy?
We didn't. Not for first. So we were throwing our own names, and it was actually, we were contemplating another Days. So my dad is Days. So I'm obviously Days, and was like, I threw it out there to Sarah. I was like, well, what about Days? And she was like, I'll question that one. But she was like, what about MJ? After Mike and James.
She suggested it.
Wow. Yeah. She had it in her mind, and I was like, straight away, I was like, oh my God, yeah, absolutely love it.
It's so powerful, remembering your brothers that way.
Yeah.
Do you feel they're with you?
Definitely, without a doubt. I don't believe I'd be where I am right now if they weren't supporting me energetically in some way. I really do, yeah, yeah. I've certainly wasn't spiritual after everything that happened, but I am extremely spiritual now. It has really guided me down a route of spirituality, and just, people call it all sorts of things, God, a higher power, the universe, whatever it may be, but I certainly believe there's some energy out there looking after us, and I certainly believe that, yeah, Mike and James are helping me along the way for sure.
So what is it for you then? Could you pinpoint it or not?
I would call it God. I would call it an energy. I just believe that we're certainly here for a reason, I do believe. And I don't know why things happen the way that they do. You know, I certainly don't know why all of the tragedy was thrown our way. But in some way, I believe that it's happened for a reason. And I am trying to believe that, for me personally, to make meaning of it and go and help others. Mm. Like, if something good can come of what has happened, go for it. And so that's kind of the route I found myself go down. And it's crazy, like, it's I think since I've started trusting in God or that energy or whatever it is, I don't know, doors have opened up to me that I wouldn't have seen opening before. And I think I've completely changed as a person. Completely. I'm a different man than I was before.
For the better.
For the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah,
in every way. Yeah.
So you change your career completely.
Yeah. I ended up... I said I'm going to give counselling a go for a year, and solely because it was for an exploration of one's own life in year one. I was like, I'll give it a go just to explore my life and to go even deeper than where I'm at right now. And so, OK, I'll give it a go, and found a year so powerful. Oh, my God, it was brilliant, you know, because I think we'll never truly know ourselves. We can keep on peeling back the layers. And the more we keep healing, the more there'll be to learn. Mm. And so that's what I found after that year. And I found it so beneficial. And then, you know, on occasion when we did get to support other people within groups, I was like, my God, I actually really, really enjoy this, helping other people. And before I knew it, I ended up graduating as a counsellor with Clear Mind. And, you know, it was a really great experience because I kept on learning about myself and I got to help others. Like, there's a huge sense of, like, I feel very grateful for that. It's a nice feeling to be able to support somebody else through something that they're struggling with. Like, personally, I find that, like, that's a gift. I love it. And so, yeah, I did that. And then I went on and did a master's in life coaching and management coaching in UCC because I found that it's important to go back and explore our past and for what has happened and to let go of those emotions that are holding us back. But it's also important to be very conscious of who we are in the present moment and who we want to be in the future. And when we want to think about who we are and who we want to be, we need to set goals for ourselves along the way. And so that's what guided me towards coaching. And I'd worked with a coach like Tom Carey was a coach, and I'd worked with other coaches as well. And like there was a real, you know, it can be a powerful experience having something in your mind and going for it and knowing how to go about it and how to weave and wander between the different obstacles that come your way. And so, yeah, ended up going down that route of counselling, coaching, and yeah, set up my own practice 2 years ago.
Congratulations. And I can only begin to imagine how effective you are as a counsellor. And I suppose it's probably one of the most unexpected gifts of the pain that you went through is that it gives you such deep understanding of pain, of loss, that whoever is sitting in front of you, you can hold that space for them because you've experienced such darkness yourself, and they do say it's people who have been through really tough experiences that can help others more than anyone else, you know. So turning that into good is it must be very fulfilling.
Yeah, it is. It's like I don't finish at the end of the day and dislike my job. I'm tired by the end of the day, but I love it. I absolutely love it, because when you can see that you're helping somebody, all I literally do is support people. People end up changing for themselves, so they do. But being a signpost in relation to that change and guiding them in the right direction, like that is, yeah, again, as I said, I feel very grateful for that. And by the end of the week, there's this real sense of satisfaction there from having been able to support somebody else. And so, yeah, absolutely love it. Would never have seen myself doing it before, but what has happened has guided me to where I am right now.
And you wouldn't change it?
Certainly wouldn't change that. No, definitely not.
No. So 2 years after MJ was born, Jack came along.
Yeah.
So you're busy.
Busy. Busy for sure. Yeah.
Five and a 3 year old now.
5 and 3 year old. Yeah. So busy.
So it's all
household.
Go.
All go. All go. It's starts it. Well, my day starts at 5:30 in the morning because I try and get up and do a workout before all the madness starts.
Yeah,
just because I think it's important for myself physically. You know, obviously it's important for me to keep on staying as mobile as I possibly can. And for me, I want to keep on pushing the boundaries in terms of, you know, bringing myself on. Like, I've come so far now after 9 years. I don't plan on stopping now. I plan on keep going in that regard. And so that's how I start my day. But then kids wake up by 6:30 and the madness of it all starts.
Yeah.
Look, it's great. My God, it's great. Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Nothing like it. Wouldn't change it for the world.
I would imagine in terms of where you've come from, you're progressing all the time.
All the time, for sure. Yeah.
What is mobility like now?
Mobility, it's my hand function is probably what I struggle with most. And so that's obviously an issue. Like, tie my shoelaces, tying short buttons, something I cannot do, writing and stuff like that. But like, you can adapt to that. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Sort of. You can adapt to that, so you can. But I've come so far, so I have so far, and it's going to keep on improving without a shadow of a doubt. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, as I said, to keep on this journey of keep on learning about myself physically, mentally and emotionally, and keep on improving all the time.
Look back to June of 2011 versus now at the end of 2020. How different, you've said you've changed so much. How different a person are you? How would you describe the Desi from then to now?
I think Desi before I was, I would have been a bit of a closed book. I don't think people would have seen that in me, but, you know, I would, as I said, I would never spoke honestly about how I felt and what was going on for me. I would have been very focused on work, focused on sport, focused on all those external things that we can focus on in life, right? We can be extremely busy with all of those things. Me now, whilst I'm very conscious, like, that work is important, having hobbies are important, having outlets are important, now I have no problem in just being who I am and opening up honestly about who I am. I've no problem being here with you today. I feel grateful for being here with you today and just speaking from my heart about what has happened and who I am now. Like, I wouldn't have been able to do that before. I was a person that I used to actually despise public speaking. I used to get so anxious and so worried. So red-faced. Actually, in school, that was my nickname, Red, because I used to get embarrassed when having to, you know, being called out in the middle of the class and put on the spotlight was on me. Look at me now. And so, yeah, I mean, now I go around to schools and speak, share my story, but with the purpose of inspiring people and mention about different tools. And so I do that in organisations, schools, the sports teams. And so I'm a very, very different man. I remember on one occasion I was watching an episode of Home and Away with Sarah, and we were sitting on the couch. Something sad happened in the show, and a tear started coming rolling down my eye.
Yeah.
She was like, "Okay, I think you've gone too far with this vulnerability piece." I was like, "Maybe I have," but yeah. So look, I've certainly changed. I'm a different man, and so I think the ripple effect will start from there, because it'll be the same. My kids will see that in me, and hopefully they'll.
Yeah,
end
I was just
up
about to say, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone else. Like, I think we're unaware of the power we have as human beings.
Mm.
Like, when we do something positive like that for ourselves and we live that way, there's a different energy about us. And so people around us will get a sense of it and possibly go about doing the same themselves, even if it's an unconscious awareness that's happening. But I certainly believe we all have a powerful ripple effect in this world, for sure.
Mm. Are you ever afraid? Because things happened so shocking with no warning, are you ever afraid that something else may happen? If that's not an insensitive question to ask, but is fear a player in your life?
It did cross my mind before, way back. That was before even having the boys. But now, no, like, I don't. I've often been asked the question, like, would you let your boys play sport or hurling, you know, given what had happened to me? And I was like, straight away, yes, of course. I would guide them in that way. No matter what it is, I don't care what it is.
Yeah, great.
But once they go and do something, but, like, it has ended up being hurling for MJ, and it looks like Jack too. You know, from such a young age, you can see they're just extremely interested in it.
Yes.
And that's from not from me pushing them in that direction, but
like the environment,
and so exactly, yeah. And so so in terms of fear of something happening, I try and focus on what I want in my life rather than what I don't want. No, I mean, honestly, because I think I've done so much work on myself and I've worked hard at rebuilding my mind to get into a strong place, that I'm not fearful of the future. I'm actually hopeful in terms of when I think of the future. And I'm like, you know, who knows what's ahead? But it's going to be an exciting journey for sure.
Yeah.
And so I don't look at it with fear. I'm like, it's going to be a great one. Yeah.
And it already is. It already is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So small improvements all the time.
All the time.
Physically. Business is going really well. Work is going really well. Family life.
Yeah.
How are your parents now? And how's your other brother, Connor, doing?
Doing extreme. Like, doing, all things considered, like, doing well.
Yeah.
We speak about the boys when we're together. Like, we don't block it out. We share happy memories that we've had with one another. Of course, it brings up emotions, like, along the way. Christmas time now, like, there's no point saying it's not going to be, like, it can be difficult. Days can be difficult. Some days will be really happy, you know, because kids will be around. But other times, there'll be a wave of sadness, there'll be a wave of emotions whereby it'll all start creeping up and the memories of them not being here with us right now. And I don't see that as being a bad thing. Before I would have, before I would have fought sadness, like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way, I shouldn't be this way, when it's a perfectly normal emotion. It's okay to feel sad. If I have to go off and cry for a while, I will do it. And my parents, no, I believe, are the same, and Connor too. Like, we'll speak to one another about when we're struggling, if there's something tough going on for us, like, we'll open up about it. And yeah, so, which is great. And I think because of that, we're all doing so well. My mum and dad are, like, they're absolutely amazing. They're so, so powerful. So they are getting on with life as best they can. Their lives have changed so much. They're getting on with it. And Connor's the same. Like, he's powering through, still playing sport, busy with work. And I think we have a close relationship. We're all living about 2 miles from one another, all of us, which is great. Like, so we can stay connected all the time.
Great.
Which is,
and I'm sure they love seeing the boys often as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Like, my mum has them. We call down a couple of times during the week, but she minds them every Thursday as soon as they finish, when Jack finishes play school and MJ finishes school. And she loves that. Like, they love it as well. But obviously doesn't make up in any way, shape or form for what has happened to her.
Of course.
But it's a real positive thing in her life.
Sure.
You know, she's mad about them and they're mad about her.
Yeah. What would your words of any kind of advice or any sort of, you know, I suppose how you'd like maybe somebody to have spoken to you when you were in a dark place, who maybe is listening to this and is struggling right now?
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
To begin with, I would say, don't be afraid of that dark place. A lot of the time we can fear going anywhere near it. Like, those feelings of darkness and feeling so low, we can try and go away from it rather than actually going into it, which is a perfectly normal response. Having to go into it can be quite painful. But if you feel low, or if you feel down, or if you feel like you're in a dark place, actually allow yourself to go in there and kind of speak from there, if you can at all, to somebody in your life, and to open it up. Because, as I said a while back, like, underneath there's that darkness, there's any light waiting to shine through. And so if you're struggling with anything, don't be afraid to open up about it. Let somebody in there, and then obviously, like, do things to, like, look after oneself, like, as best we can. I think we all need to get as much sleep as we can, to exercise as much as we can, just get a good routine, not drinking as much, everything along those lines. We'll all have different ways of minding ourselves. We'll all have different things that will serve us. But in terms of our mental and emotional health, like, open up for sure and do things to look after our minds. Like, for me, I never meditated before all this happened. But now I do it religiously, like, twice a day, because I do find it certainly quietens the mind. And getting out in nature, just going for a walk, anything along those lines, like, we'll get a sense of peace in some shape or form. And so if you're struggling, always know that there's hope. Always. No matter what we're going through, like, we will work our way through it once we decide to, and put it just a conscious effort into doing it. And there'll be light in dealing with that darkness. I certainly believe so. Anyway, that's been my experience of it all. And I know from working with people, that's been their experience too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Desi, I am so thankful to you. This has been a really profound conversation. And I'm so happy for you that you're in such a great place in your own life, with your family, with your wife and your kids and your folks and your brother Connor, but also the ripple effect, as you've been talking about, that you're having with people who attend your sessions or hear you speak, and who will hear this conversation, and you will help through you being vulnerable and sharing your experiences. Continued success and health and progression.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what else you do. I'm really honoured that you said yes to having this conversation, particularly during a very busy time you know, the end of December coming up to Christmas is a bit manic for us all, but you were so accommodating and it means a lot to me. I can't thank you enough for this. It's just been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Amina, thank you for having me.
If this episode struck a chord with you, please do share it with friends or family or anyone who you think will benefit from hearing it. This episode of Ready to Be Real Conversations was brought to you in partnership with hcc.ie and supported by Irish Life Health. hcc.ie's experts can help you find a health insurance plan that suits your needs and your budget.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Peace with an A, B-I, and then Peace with an I. Thank you so much.